9 matches down, 9 to go in the regular season of the Netball Super League 2024. Welcome to Courtside, the official England netball podcast. I'm Lindsay, and as we hit the midpoint of the Netball Super League season this year, I wanted to take a moment to dissect the twists and turns of what's happened so far and explore the challenges that stand between our teams and a place in the all-important top four. To do that, I'm delighted to say that England Roses head coach Jess Thilby is with me. Hi, Jess. Welcome to the pod.
Thanks for having me.
It's lovely to be with you. And just for context, Jess, this is what the table looks like at the moment. So if you can just imagine, Manchester Thunder and Loughborough Lightning are sitting in that first and second position, and they're actually only separated by goal difference. So we're really very tight at the top of the table.
Yeah, I know. It couldn't get any tighter.
It's unbelievable. So they've both scored 608 goals, but Manchester Thunder have managed to have slightly fewer goals against them. So that's how that's working. Then we've got London Pulse and Seven Stars. So that's the top four. Cardiff Dragons, Surrey Storm, Mavericks and Leeds Rhinos are in that 5-8 position. And then Team Bath and Strathclyde Sirens are in 9 and 10 at the moment. And it's brilliant, isn't it? Seven Stars have been shining in that top four zone.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, positions 4-8 is most probably where I'm most excited, because I think that's still doable for any of those teams to kind of nudge themselves into the top four. So it will hold Seven Stars accountable as we head into the second half of the season. I know they'll be keen to not just stay there, but even maybe nudge up and take a few scalps. And I reckon Loughborough most probably be slightly aggrieved that they sit in that second position, having had such a convincing win over Manchester Thunder in that head-to-head. So, yeah, there's a lot riding on, you know, the second half of the season, and that's exactly how we want it to be.
Yeah, Manchester, I think, have had 15 fewer goals scored against them, because they're both on 24 points altogether with 8 wins and just 1 loss. So that's all that separates the top two. As an ex-Cardiff Dragons coach, though, you must be delighted to see them move into the top half of the table in position 5.
Yeah, look, it doesn't surprise me. I think I've said, you know, since the opening round, I think we had this argument as well, Lindsay, because you said that you'd said something similar, but it doesn't surprise me actually that they recruited well. You know, I think we often see players return to Dragons, in particular, obviously those that have played internationally for Wales as well, but I think overall recruited really well. And obviously Jill McIntosh consistently there. I know she only kind of arrived late into the season last year, so some continuity, some real discipline and organisation, obviously bringing years of experience at the highest level, kind of for me always suggested that they would be strong this year. And if anything, I think we'll have been frustrated by, you know, not taking the scalp of some other teams around them, like a Surrey Storm early on, and losing those points. So had they taken them, you know, they may well be giving Seven Stars a run for their money. So not surprising to me. It may be to lots of other people simply based on history and finishing positions over the last few years, but it makes for a great second half of the season, as I say, amongst those ambitious teams.
Yeah, not a surprise for me either. And thank you for saying it. I did call it ahead of the season. Definitely ones to watch. Jess, before we got onto our highlights of round 1-9, though, we wanted to bring in a couple of players who are actually living it week in, week out. So joining us on the pod are two athletes crowned player of the match in their respective round 9 games. Amy Carter from Manchester Thunder and Halimat Adio from London Pulse. Ladies, welcome to the podcast.
Hey. Thank you very much. It's kind of funny that we both got POM this week. It's like we prepared it or something.
I know. When I saw that happening, I was like, this is good, because we've asked these girls to be on the podcast, which is great. Also, obviously, your England netball head coach is on with us, Jess Thilby. Do you normally find out if you're in the England team on a Zoom call like this? Like, what's it like to suddenly be on a podcast?
We've had different ways that we found out, really. For big tours, like World Cup and stuff, we found out on a Zoom. I remember on the World Cup one, when I was reserved for that, I was in the middle of a ward round, so I got a message from Jess, like, can you jump onto a call? So I like dipped out for a little bit into the corridor, and I was sat on a not used bed. But then, yeah, the other tours or the selection for the programme, I think that's usually through email. It's usually a 10 o'clock embargoed email where you sat there waiting waiting to find out, really.
Because you're a doctor, aren't you, Amy? So what was that like, Jess, when you rang and sort of had to have that call while she was doing a ward round?
I know. Well, Amy's like, it's like water off a duck for Amy. And I have to constantly check. I can't have anyone's lives at risk as a result of taking a call from me. So like, I'm like, Amy, are you sure you can take a call? Yeah, it's fine. And most probably in the background, you know, she's most probably saving lives whilst picking up the phone. So yeah, it's a big responsibility, isn't it? And always mindful that there's most probably never a perfect way to obviously break the news. And when it's really good news, obviously it's a real joy, but it is a tricky one to get right. And the players kind of feedback as to how they prefer to find out as well. So yeah, like Amy said, it has been a mixture really, but I loved making those calls to these two, because I think to a lesser or greater extent, I'm not sure they even expected World Cup reserve. So I definitely remember the call with Hallie as well. I think that was, I won't speak on your behalf, Hallie, but it was a lovely call. And it was nice to speak to both of them. Obviously, Amy had returned from injury. Hallie had also had long-term injury. And I think at that point, it was hopefully really good news, albeit not quite in that 12. It was brilliant to have them both on the journey with us for World Cup.
Do you remember that call, Hallie? What was it like?
Yeah, to be fair, I remember because I couldn't sleep the night before, but it was mainly to see if I got into full time. And then I got a message from Jess and I was a bit like, oh no, what's going on? And then we had the conversation. She was like, oh, as well, would you like to be reserved? And I put myself on mute, had a little bit of a cry, and I was like, oh yes, please, thanks. I like getting calls like that because it's just like you don't expect it and then just the good news come.
That's incredible. Yeah. I love that she was like, yeah, and would you also, by the way, like to come to World Cup? And you were like, oh, yeah, go on then. That's great. Oh, it's so fascinating to hear these things from the other side. Let's, though, talk about the Super League 2024 and the first half of the season, because we've hit that midpoint now, haven't we? What does the season feel like inside your two squads at the moment? Because Manchester Thunder currently sitting top of the league and London Pool sitting in that third position at the moment. Hallie, do you want to start us off? What's it like inside the Pool squad at the moment?
Yeah, it's really good. I think when the season started, we didn't really know what to expect. And obviously we had that loss against Manchester. And I think that just gave us a little bit of a kick. And we were like, yeah, that can't happen again. But yeah, we're really focused in camp, and I think because of how the rounds are going, like you don't know what to expect. We're just kind of going into matches being like, we need to just go in guns blazing. We need to put our full 100% performance in, because every team is a potential. Like, for example, our match against Mavericks, they're always a close squad that we go against. And again, it was a close match. So we just need to make sure that we're going 100% focused into matches. But yeah, the camp's really good. We're all connecting really nicely. I actually think this year's probably the most that we've been connected, which is really lovely to have.
And that game against Mavs was the one that you've just played, wasn't it? Your round nine game where you got player of the match and frankly saved the game in the dying seconds with that intercept that you put in, that little deflection. So brilliant to sort of talk about that moment. Amy, do you have a moment so far? Is there anything that sort of really stands out for you in the games that you've played already?
I want to say the first game.
Which you can, which is against Pulse.
Great England, how harsh.
But I don't know if I'm just trying to wind Hallie up a little bit to be. Yeah, no, the first game was good. I think we came out quite strong, but there was obviously a lot of things that we wanted to work on following that game. I think our training sessions are just really good. Like, we get a lot out of them. Everyone challenges each other. There's like really good lines of communication. It's really healthy the way that you can just say, can you do that? And someone replies, yes, I can do that. And then you try it and then see if it works, doesn't work. It's just very healthy lines of communication, which you don't always get with people. And at Thunder, I think everyone has like a one goal. So I think going out on games and like punishing teams, really. We obviously, probably one of the standout games was against Loughborough, where we did lose quite a lot. And that is a standout for the opposite reason. But you need those games to realise what you need to do to be better. Because if you keep winning games by quite a lot or like fairly easily, and you can get your whole bench on, you're not going to learn as much. So you need to make sure that we keep pushing forward.
Jess, you and I actually commentated that game together, didn't we? The Loughborough-Manchester Thunder game. And we were talking about it at the beginning. And Amy, as you say, your two teams are sort of level. Well, you're very level pegging, aren't you? You're both in that first position, just separated by goal difference. But we were talking a lot, Jess, weren't we, about what you learn, because back in, I think it was 2022, Thunder had that undefeated season, which was brilliant, and you went all the way through. But Karen Gregg was sort of saying, if you are going to have those losses, Jess, you need to have them early on to learn.
Well, I think any really good team is mature enough to do that. You know, like, I think we're all quite, we all let emotion in, don't we, to a lesser or greater extent, but there's no point kind of wallowing in that just based on an outcome. You know, like, these girls and their teams, you know, like, they're all out there trying to lift the trophy at the end of the season, and the games come so quick. You know, like, this week there's been a game on a Monday, there'll be another game on Friday. You know, Maverick's involved in both. Like, you can't dwell on results. I think the most intriguing thing about a performance like that is obviously Amy's touched on, you know, the different combinations and that being a huge strength of Manchester Thunder, which I believe that has been the case for years, you know, that kind of seamless transition off the bench. And I think when we were watching Lindsay, that, you know, there was an emptying of the bench from Karen in search of a combination that would be able to claw back that margin against Loughborough. So I imagine, and obviously I'm not in that Thunder camp, but I imagine, you know, they're pretty mature enough to work out what was it that we found most challenging about what Loughborough put out against us that day, that, you know, the changes didn't necessarily give as big an impact as they've characteristically done in pre. And every team's having a match like that. I think the scary thing is the bounce back of a team after a performance like that is brutal. So I definitely don't want to be a team that... you know, you come up against somebody who's had one of those results. I think if you look at anybody, you know, albeit Pulse, you know, if they've lost a match where they would have hoped or expected to be better, they've gone on and had a brilliant performance in the very next game. And I think that's been a real habit of teams this year. So, yeah, I guess my question to Amy would be more, you know, we talk about learning. So what did you learn? And whether that's individual, Amy, or as a collective, what did it kind of highlight for you as a team? Because it's fine saying we don't want another game like that, but obviously, you know, it's the intelligence of it, isn't it? It's like, what did Loughborough do? What did we notice? And therefore, what will we be well prepared for next time?
Yeah, I think it's quite easy to blame the attack, because that's where you lose a ball and you get to win games if you score a few goals. But I think our defensive structure wasn't quite as clean as it usually is. Like, normally we have lots of snowball intercepts where someone goes on something and then someone else reciprocates off that. We didn't really have that. We were kind of going for everything and not getting anything. And then I think in attack, we weren't ready for that physicality. So in that following training session, we beat each other up really. And we did like one of the drills that we call a gauntlet, where you have to get a certain amount of passes in each area. And there's not really rules or umpiring in that. And you just got to get used to that body and just get over it, because you are going to get hit in a game and you're not going to get every call, and you just need to just move on really and just be able to take that hit and just pull it in and still deliver a good pass.
Very much enjoying Hallie smiling through that when you said no rules, no umpire. She was like, yeah, get me in that.
No, it's just more of a mindset thing. I actually really like the mindset of you guys. I think just you saying that, like, just going into training and you kind of the bounce back and wanting to go in and compete against each other and go hard against each other. And then, for example, you do that little gauntlet drill where you don't complain, oh, it's contact, oh, where's the umpiring? I think that's a really good mindset to have, because then when you go into matches and you expect there to be calls, you're used to having that at training, and then you won't be complaining about it. You'll just be getting on with it. Yeah, that was a smile I was giving you guys.
It was lovely. It was lovely. I guess off the back of that, I'm interested from both of you guys, Amy and Hallie, about what surprised you this season, maybe about other teams or certain players. Is there anything that's sort of changed from last season that's a little bit different?
Yeah, I would say team-wise, to be fair, like, for example, Seven Stars, I always knew they had a really good team and a really good bunch. But I think just the way they've come from last season, they were fifth and now they're kind of battling with us third and fourth place. But the way they're just really connected on court, and I hear from the players just how, like, Joe just makes sure they have a good partnership and a good union in their kind of camp, which is really nice to hear. I definitely say they're a really good team, and they're probably one of the teams that we don't always have a great game against. So I really do enjoy playing against Seven Stars because they're big competitors against us.
Yeah, I'd agree with that, really. I feel like in the past for us, Seven Stars have been sort of our bogey team. I don't know why. There's just something about going to their venue. It's just, we've not had good games with them in the past. Like last year, we had to have a massive comeback in the last quarter. I think we had to get 10 goals back or something to end up winning it in the very last quarter. So I think they're just a really connected team. Like, there's no standout stars, I'd say, in that team. Stars. But they're all stars because they all work together, and they seem really connected. They seem friends off court and on court, and I think that really works for them. It's then hard to target if you don't have those one standout player, because you've got to focus on all of them.
Yeah.
What do you think, Jess? You're nodding away.
Yeah, no, well, I think Stars are the obvious pick, aren't they, in terms of this year? And I think, as these guys have said, they've been building. And I've been quite intrigued by the players that Joe and Seven Stars have recruited. They're not new to Super League. They're pretty much stalwarts of the league, actually. And they've come from really experienced sides and been quite important and integral to those teams. So whilst they may not be championship winning individuals, nor necessarily been in those top one or two positions, I think, you know, you're bringing players in who have played a lot of Super League netball. They know these guys inside out. And I guess, you know, like Amy said, bringing that knowledge to the fore. I also think they've got a point to prove, you know, like both individually and then collectively. You know, they've been in those teams, but they haven't been in the top four, as an example. They've been around Super League for years. Do you know what I mean? And then they've come together and done a really good job at embracing the ambition of a club that have been there or thereabouts and obviously had a bit of a breakout year last year. So I think all of that together looks like a perfect recipe for at least causing some surprises, I think, this year, which they certainly have.
Well, let's wait and see what Jo Tripp has to say. She is coming up on the podcast. Right then, let's look forward to the second half of the season. And just a note about the crowds, really, because it's only going to build from here. How are you both feeling about your big game at the AO Arena in Manchester on the 2nd of June? It's Thunder against Pulse. Obviously, you can get your tickets now, but you're both smiling at each other. And I love that you know each other from the England camp, but, you know, that's going to be loud.
Yeah. I'm actually really excited.
Yeah, I think we put on a show last year with Rhinos, playing them at the AO Arena. I think this year it will be even tighter with Pulse, and I think you've got something to prove after the first game. So I'm sure you're going to come back and bring it up to Manchester, and it's going to be like a really tightly contested game, I reckon. And I guess Hallie's already said she enjoys the mindset of beating up, so you might be bringing that to Manchester.
I will be.
Just on that note, in terms of like your closing games, like I think it's really interesting, like the matches that you each respectively face in as you head towards hopefully what will be a semi-final. So Hallie, you'll have hit Dragons just before heading up to the AO Arena, and then you've got the small task of Loughborough and then meeting Mavs, which I don't want to remind you, but you lost that one in the last league round last year and have obviously just had a feisty battle as recently as this week. And, you know, three away games to finish, whereas Manchester Thunder, so Amy, you guys will hit Pulse and then you've got Sirens and Leeds away. So as it stands at the moment in terms of the table, it suggests that you've got the slightly easier run in despite some travel. Whereas Pulse, it feels like, you know, if used well, that's going to really sharpen you for a semi-final, but comes with a bit more risk if things stay as they are at the minute. So I'm just curious as to which one would you prefer? You know, your hand is dealt anyway, you can't change it. But based on what you think gets you really ready for a semi-final, of which you've been in now a number of times, are you happy with how your hand's been dealt, or would you change anything about that run-in? What's the pros and cons of that?
I think we'll be pretty happy with having like the tougher one, just because, again, it's like a mindset thing. You've gone in, we're playing Loughborough, which again was a close match. We won by one. We have Manchester Thunder, who we're going to be going, like, we lost by, I think, maybe 16. I can't even remember. But we're definitely going to be going into that match thinking, yeah, we need to win. And I know last year we lost the first time we played against Manchester. So then we're kind of going to have that same mindset where we want to beat them. We've got Dragons, which, again, are a really competitive team, and then Mavs. And I think it's good that we have that selection so that when we do go into semi-finals, we're pretty much ready to go, have that mindset. And we'll have all our connections and structures sorted because we'll be playing against a variety of different teams.
Awesome. Amy, how about you? So you'll have gone Team Bath before you hit these guys in the AO and finish with Sirens in Leeds. Like, you're so well rehearsed now in what it takes to prepare for a semi-final, but it is a leap sometimes from, like, if we go by previous results, even this year, there's been some big blowouts against some of those respective teams. So how will you, I guess, navigate that in those final few matches?
Yeah, I guess there's pros and cons to both, isn't there? Like last year, we had Loughborough before we went into the semis, and it wasn't enough to turn it around, as we lost to Loughborough in one of our last matches, and then in the semis, we then couldn't pull through to make it to the final. So I guess it's maybe sometimes it is better having that hard game a little bit earlier in the season, because then you can continue working on like polishing off what you need to do. On the flip side, you kind of do want to go firing into a semis and final and have the toughest opponents and your best games, so then you're sharp going into it, really. So I think we'll just take it as we come and see what we can do in training as well. That's key, because employing the game plan in training and working on that, that's going to keep us sharp for the match play as well.
And who knows, it might be a warm up for another rematch a few weeks down the line if you both meet again in a semi-final.
It easily could be, couldn't it? Smiles on both your faces. I love it. There's also a bit of poker face there. Final thing from both of you then. If you could sort of sum up why people should watch the second half of the Super League, you know, what is London Pulse going to bring to the second half of the league this year? And what is Manchester Thunder? What are you going to give to your fans and the audience that come? Maybe just in a sentence or a couple of words.
I would say watch the second half of the season because you don't know what to expect. And you do like to have those close games where you're kind of on your toes. So yeah, I would say definitely watch it because it'll be a tough second season.
I think the first half of a season is always a building part of the season. You're working out what works for teams and you're trialing out new combinations. Second half of the season is game time where you found out what you need to know. You're just employing game plan and just producing good results. So it'll definitely be a very exciting half of the season, and definitely go and watch because it'll be fiery out there.
It's game time. Brilliant stuff. Thank you both so much for joining myself and Jess on the podcast, and best of luck for the second half of the season.
Thank you very much.
Oh, Jess, it's just brilliant, isn't it, to have so many of the Roses playing across the different Super League sides, as well as the international players that we're loving watching, and, you know, the players from Wales and Northern Ireland and Scotland as well. But I think, you know, one of the things that we sort of talk about in commentary is connection. And I know that you're really interested in what's sort of going on just off the ball, or maybe not that sort of star player that we might know, you know, you're sort of Nat Metcalfe's when it comes to Amy Carter, because obviously Nat's on those really high feed numbers into the circle. But I just wondered what your thoughts were around that, really.
I guess I'm constantly scanning for, like, trying to understand why somebody is, I don't know, having an outstanding game or what leads to that. And because I enjoy, like, the team cohesion side of it so much and bringing together a group or a unit or a partnership to shine, like, I think some of the teams are just doing such a brilliant job at playing to the strengths of either their individuals or the collective strength of their style of play as a unit. So I think that's just my genuine curiosity. That's just me as a person, you know, like, forget the day job. I just kind of like to uncover what is it that's enabling that to happen, because that's where the magic is for me. So you take a London Pulse with a Fumi Fidoju, of course we're all well aware of her incredible talent. But actually what I quite like to do is scan around that and think, well, what's Zara doing? You know, how's Hallie supporting that? You know, what is this Pulse identity in terms of how they play that enables her to stand out as well as, and don't get me wrong, she would do it anyway to an extent. But I think, you know, we've all got examples, I think, where you've got real talent in a team, but you don't necessarily see that reach its potential. And that's really sad. So I just think, yeah, a huge testament really to the teams that really understand their style of play. I think a Loughborough, for me, you know, like, they seem super clear, very structured. They know that their strength is in the collective. I don't think there's particularly any one player in there that they're over-reliant upon, but they've got a great identity in terms of how they play, big range in defence, real hustle and real possession in attack, and they stay true to that. And I think for those that have got real clarity on that, that's where you see the more consistent performing teams.
Let me just come back to you on that, because I think you're right, and I love watching Loughborough because I feel like they play as a team and you can really feel the movement of all seven. But they've got Mary, who is obviously that target shooter. She's the highest number of goals in the Super League. If Mary Chollock was taken out of that team, would Loughborough Lightning still be in the top 1, 2, 3?
Yeah, I think they would. You know, that isn't me dismissing at all the impact that Mary has had. And I think if you go back a couple of years, or maybe even up until last year, I think her value to that team was most probably even higher. And I think there was most probably a reliance on that. But year on year, teams know they're coming up against the Loughborough side with Mary Chollock. You know, I think that's been something that they've had to sit with to understand, like, how do we reinvent ourselves without necessarily reinventing loads of people in the team? And so I think you've seen that this year. You know, I don't think it's by accident that Vic Burgess has given herself more options in that attacking circle for that very reason. Because if a team can get on top of Mary or starve the ball coming in, then I think they have been found out or caught out. It may just be quarters, you know, like, because ultimately, you know, they're the reigning champions, but it's enough of a little sign, and a good team and a good coach will see that, you know, potential crack and vulnerability, and they'll act on it immediately. And I think Vic's been ahead of that. She's been proactive with it. they have got some real experience down that end. Obviously, Niamh McCall coming, Ella Clark returning from injury, Rhea Dixon backing up, you know, a good season last year. And so, and Mary's moving, you know, like all these tall shooters are suddenly like adding strings to their bow. Liv Cheen's running outside the circle, but they're doing it really effectively and being quite selective. So I agree with you. Is she still incredibly important to Loughborough? Of course she is. But do I think they're a quality team that would still sit inside the top three? Yes, I do, because I think they're ahead of that and they plan well for change in that team.
Well, there you go. So let's think about your highlights, my highlights then from round 1 to 9. Maybe a standout moment or a standout game. I think mine is a little run of game. So for me, it was Pulse beating Loughborough Lightning by 1 at the Copper Box back in round 3. Then Stars beating Pulse. I think that one was 54-47 at the Copper Box. That was round 5. And then Dragons beat Stars. So there's all these sort of games going on where you think, oh, they've got the one up over them, and then someone else comes in. So I think the sort of choppiness of the season has been my real highlight, and that the middle of the table for me is looking much closer than it has done at this stage in other years. And I think that's exciting. What about you?
Yeah, well, I can't disagree with the ones that you've highlighted. That's definitely on my list. But if I go for something slightly different, I think round 6 threw up some really interesting stories. So I think Pulse beating Leeds by just the 2 away from home, you know, most probably a little bit of a staccato performance, but got the win nonetheless. And then Dragons beating Stars by 2, as you've highlighted, but then the big win for Loughborough over Thunder and at Thunder as well. So made even more important, I think, and most probably took all of us, including us two who were in the commentary box, a little bit by surprise, but a really solid performance from Loughborough. So as a round, I thought that told a lot of stories, actually. And I agree, you know, we need a league where things aren't too predictable. I think, unfortunately, we've had too many blowout scores as well. But we're also in a bit of a situation when teams are firing, there's more of a risk and a vulnerability that they may beat a team and topple a team who sits above them and vice versa, which makes, you know, that keeps us on the edge of our seat going in and out of every round at the moment. But yeah, that middle of the table is... I think there'll be teams that really ruin results from early on. You know, I think Storm got off to a great start, actually, and most probably taking the scalps of a Dragons and a Mavericks was so important for them. You know, like, had they not done that, they'd be sat a lot lower. But equally, it kind of stunted, you know, the development and growth of those other teams that would have most probably started the season with real ambition to kind of be the next best, if not in that top 4. So I think Dragons have now, you know, found a bit of a flow and a rhythm. And I think Leeds were, by their own admission, far too slow to start, which frustrated Liana Liotta because they'd had a good pre-season. But they've started to find some form now as well. So, yeah, it's an interesting one because I think that middle of the table is where there's going to be the biggest movement, if I'm honest. I don't see the kind of top 2, top 3 changing hugely. But I think from position 4, 5 and 6, I think that's all up for grabs still, which is great.
You're right. It's brilliant for the league. But I think let's look then at the top 4. And as you say, there might not be a huge amount of movement ahead of semi-finals and finals. But what do the league leaders have to do to stay in pole position? And if anything, what weaknesses or chinks in the armour have you spotted that others can exploit?
Oh, you're putting me under pressure now.
I know. And all the head coaches will be like, yes, please tell us.
No, she hasn't got a clue. I think it's really difficult, I think, to highlight kind of chinks in the armour of sides with the quality, depth and experience of a Thunder and a Loughborough. But, you know, if anyone wants to, then just take a look at that game, because Loughborough arrived in Manchester with a game plan and pretty much got on top of Thunder really early on. And there were no answers from Thunder on that day. And it is a rarity, you know, to see a Thunder side and impact off the bench not to be quite as we've got used to from Thunder. So, you know, from their perspective, I already think you've seen the signs of an Elmeray Vanderberg. You know, like she's playing a bigger part in that side now than what we'd seen in the opening 6 or 7 rounds, where it was very much a Paige Reed, Lois Pearson circle. And I think Karen alluded to that in that post-match interview. And they obviously went to Wembley and Elmeray was on the whole time. And she's also spoken about her versatility to move out to goal attack. Now, a shooter of that size, that accuracy, growing in confidence, that's a great weapon for Karen Gregg to have only really been introducing as we head into the second half of the season, because of course teams won't have really faced up against that. They'll be preparing for a Paige Reed, Lois Pearson rotation, and all of a sudden you throw in the height of an Elle Murray. So I think that's, you know, that is going to be a massive sticking point for teams that come up against Thunder.
And you've possibly got her entering the circle a bit later as well if she's playing goal attack. So what does that do to the timing? What does that do, as you say, to the height? Just bringing something in a little bit different.
See, I'm not highlighting a chink. I'm highlighting a potential strength. I just don't have it in me, Lindsay. I don't have it in
it's
me.
It's like in an interview when they say to you, oh, tell us about one of your weaknesses. And you go, oh, I'm actually a brilliant leader. And that is my weakness. it is really interesting, isn't it? And teams will be looking for those moments and those chinks in the armour, but also trying to stay in that top position. And Karen Gregg actually said, I'm glad that we had that loss earlier on, and then we can really look to move things around. Someone, though, that has had a great start to the season is Jo Tripp. We've talked about her already on the podcast and her Seven Stars side. Jo became player coach of the team from the University of Worcester following the 2022 season and has guided Seven Stars to fourth in the table at the halfway stage. I caught up with Jo to get her thoughts on the season so far. Jo Tripp, player coach of Seven Stars, welcome to Courtside. It's brilliant to have you.
Thank you so much. It's nice to be here.
First question, Jo, how's retirement treating you?
Well, I think my second year in from after calling it retirement for a year, the body's actually okay, which I'm very pleased with. I think I'm in a lot, different position than I was last year, which is quite nice. So I feel like I'm having the fruits of my labour are starting to get put out on court and with my body. So it was a very short-lived retirement, and I probably wouldn't say that word again.
I always love speaking to you, Jo, and we've done a bit of commentary together as well, but it does make me smile because you finished playing for Mavs at the end of 21, didn't you, and you retired. Now we're halfway through the 2024 regular Netball Super League season, and your team, Seven Stars, are currently sitting in that all-important fourth spot with 6 wins and 3 losses, really healthy number of games out of the first 9 that you've played. How does that feel?
Brilliant. I think, when you set your sights on top 4, I think it's quite ambitious to do in your second year. A lot of these girls now I've had for probably just under 18 months, and we could definitely get in there. Others I've had for about probably 7 or 8 months. So, yeah, it's a really exciting time for the franchise. It's something they haven't had before, or they haven't been possibly sitting in this position heading into the second half. So, we're really proud of what we've achieved so far, but it has just lit a flame under us. And, we've had 2 pretty big lessons against the top 2 teams in the league at the moment. We've been able to match them for quarters. We took a quarter off Loughborough, but we weren't able to maintain that in one of the quarters, and the game got away on us. So for us, it's about kind of our discipline into this back half. I think we've got all the tools and all the skills and the strategies and the tactics behind what we're doing. And it's just our ability to apply it on court for 60 minutes.
I think when you look back at the season so far, you've talked about a number of the games there. You've talked about the marginal gains that you did get off teams like Loughborough Lightning. What moments really stand out for you, though? Because there have been some really big results, haven't there? You beat Pulse 54-47 in round 5. What a result that was. And then Mavericks in round 7 by just 2, and Surrey Storm in round 8 as well. When you look back over the first 9 games, do you have any moments that really sort of stick out in your memory?
Yeah, I think the London Pulse one was a big one for us. I think it showed the girls we are of the level of a top 4 team, and that kind of instilled that belief in us. So that was probably a really pivotal moment for us. I think also, games against Sirens, I know we were 20 points up after 20 minutes, and we just had them floored from the start, and that was a really proud moment for us, and able to get a lot of players out on court, which is always the aim, but obviously potentially a bit harder in some of these closer, tougher matches. So, yeah, the pulse going differently, but that first 20 minutes of sirens, I was well chuffed with them.
No, it's interesting to get the insight from actually being inside the game, because you are doing those two jobs. You're doing the coach job, you've got to have your coach head on, and then playing as well. And I always think, how do you do that? How can you sort of take the whole game in and see where changes need to come when you're also really involved in playing?
I don't think I've got that nailed, in all honesty, from the position as a goal D at the moment. I found it a lot easier, obviously, as goalkeeper. I felt like I could see a lot more. But now that I'm in the mix, I don't think you can really. And that's when you rely on your coaching team and kind of what they're saying and seeing. So, yeah, it's a really tough position. You can't do either 100%. And that's something I'm learning. When I'm on court, I actually just need to play and be the player, because otherwise I don't do my job there either. So, yeah. It's a tough one. I don't, you know, looking at it, definitely, you know, got a round off this year as a player coach. But then I think those decisions will need to be made of, you know, can you run a top 14 while being a player coach? I just, you know, we'll have to think seriously about that, because I don't want my role to, yeah, negatively affect the team, I think, when they're gunning for those top four positions. So, it's tough. I do not take my role lightly, or either role lightly, and it's something I guess I'm still growing and learning.
I also wonder what your perspective is on being the underdog, because I think, you know, us Brits, and I know people will know from just listening to you that you're not originally a Brit, but you've lived here for a number of years, and obviously you've played down under as well. Yeah. But we sort of like the underdog, you know, we want to get behind them, and it's those teams that go under the radar and then come up. But you're in uncharted territory now, you know. Sixth place is your highest finish in the Super League, and when we spoke after, I think, round three, I commentated your game in round three, you're actually top of the league. Do you remember me saying to you, you're sitting on the top of the league? How do you navigate being in that totally different space?
I think it's a huge shift for a lot of our players. A lot of our players haven't played top four games, and you know, they may have been in top four teams, but actually getting on and, you know, playing 45-60 minutes against top four opposition is really different for a lot of us. So for us, we're just taking in the moments and taking in the learnings against, you know, kind of each team we come up against. We're not threatened by having a target on our back. I actually think we got a bit of a target on our back last year, so we were able to, you know, teams knew we were going to come at them hard, and I definitely think we did that. So I think we kind of experienced a lot of, yeah, and learned kind of maybe that resilience against teams last year, because, you know, by about, I want to say about halfway through, we were kind of sitting fifth, so you do know teams are coming for you, maybe not as they would potentially the top two or three teams, but we definitely knew, you know, teams had to think about us and come up with a good game plan to be able to beat us. So we're not going under the radar this year. We didn't want to go under the radar. You know, there's still, you know, 9 rounds that we're looking to build on and take.
And no doubt you'll have aims and targets for the second half of the season, but I just want to take you back first to 2023, when you became the new coach player of Seven Stars, because 2022 was a really tough season for the Stars, wasn't it? They finished bottom, they only won 3 games, and at the end of that season only 2 players remained. So you really had to come in and build a brand new team and a brand new culture from nothing. And I remember you interviewing at the time, and you said a couple of words that I found really interesting. One, that it was overwhelming, mm-hmm. but two, that it was also exciting and unknown, and you wanted to challenge the top teams, and your intention, you said at the time, was to become one of the top teams ourselves. And here you are just a year and a half later, sitting in that fourth spot. You know, the big question, and everyone will be listening to this, Joe, how have you done it?
I've recruited really wicked people. Honestly, you know, truth be told, I think at the top, the skill level closes. We know that. I've just recruited, I've gone out there and just recruited awesome people. Yes, they play brilliant netball, but first and foremost, they're great people. I like being around them. I hope they like being around me, because you end up being around each other a lot. And I think awesome people really dictate your culture and really help kind of ease that in. It's something I've seen, you know, I remember kind of when I was in under-19s in New Zealand, in all honesty, going back, I had an under-19 coach that came in, and we had kind of come through like our age groups together. There was a core group of us, and she kind of went left field and selected quite a different team. I remember thinking, oh, mate, were these the best players at trials? Like, you know, because you'd often played with kind of the same lineup and defense and whatnot. And honestly, the people she selected were phenomenal people. And we went and we absolutely rinsed. And I remember just thinking that is a really interesting way to select a team. And then I had it again when I was under 23s, a very similar thing where I thought two girls would get in the team. And then kind of, you know, the coach kind of said, well, would they sit on a bench and be happy? And I thought, oh, no. And then I was like, oh, my God, like the teams I've really thrived and really loved being in. And, you know, coaches have selected kind of based on that personality. So that's a big part of, I think, why we are doing so well. 10 of my girls work full time. They've got very similar lifestyles in the background, which means when they come to Network's really treasured time, they really enjoy each other. And that time has to be really, really valuable for them. Yeah, I think the people is what's doing it at the moment. Maybe a little touch of me somewhere in there, but it's, yeah, definitely the girls.
I'm positive there's a touch of you somewhere in there, but you can actually feel what you're talking about on course as well, you know, because I'm very privileged. I can see the benches, I can feel the benches and the communication, and stars genuinely feel like they're having a good time. And I was also thinking, gosh, can enjoying your netball together have this big an impact? And you're sort of saying to me, well, yes, it can. And your group, they call each other the group of weirdos, don't they?
Yeah, that was definitely a last year thing that has carried over. Honestly, some of these girls are weird.
Who's the weirdest?
They're all so weird in different ways. I think, like, Becca always comes out with random stuff.
Who does that? Sorry, we missed the name.
Rebecca Airy.
Rebecca Airy, yes.
Yeah, she'll be running around and be like, la, 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 and you're just like, all right. Like, no missing, you know, you're like, talk, and that's what comes out. You're like, cool, crack on. Like, they're brilliant. I think, you know, a big part of what I said earlier is they do work full time. You know, they're working so hard in the background to make a living and have their lives. And this is just a really cool part of it. And so, you know, I hope to have an environment which they love coming to, they train really hard in, and they succeed in.
And this year you've retained six of your squad from last year, and there are six new faces to the squad as well. So you've got Radiman, you've got Creek, Liversidge in there, Decker, Neve Cooper, who I think has just come into her own, and Ella Powell Davis as well. And that's one of the things that I think has really propelled Stars this season, is that you've got your starting seven, but then it doesn't feel like you've also got five other players. And I know we talk about the bench a lot, but I really feel like this squad is very interchangeable, mm-hmm. and that they all have different roles and different jobs, and you can apply what each player can do to that specific team that you're playing against.
I think that's an area that I probably am learning the most about this year, in all honesty. I feel like, you know, I've got such strong players. I've got 12. I've actually got 16, including, yeah, my TPs and one of our TAs, who is with us full time. And yeah, it's a really privileged position to be in. And I think, you know, I may still not know exactly what every player can give to me. And that's really quite hard to just do in one season. You know, I feel like I am reaping the rewards with players that have been with us, you know, for the second season. I see, you know, Jess Shaw. Her game has, you know, her game came a long way last year, but this year it's at a whole nother level again. You know, Ziggy the same, and you know, someone young like Jazz Brown, you've got, you know, again, got a taste for it last year and is back in. So, yeah, I think keeping that continuity, it was still quite a big loss of players. If you look at a lot of other starting teams as well, probably got three new in my starting line. You know, Pulse maybe have one. And the midcourt, maybe two actually, the wing attack centre, obviously with Jade and Chelsea kind of stepping back there.
Yeah, out injured, yeah.
Lightning, you know, they've swapped Fran for a 6'4" defender.
Yeah, it's not a bad swap, is it?
Alan Clark's back, so that's a tough one. And then Thunder, you know, they've recruited well within that. Yeah, having Imogen Allison bringing her in, and then within their shooting circle, yes, they've had change, but they've also got another, you know, couple of target shooters in there. So I think there's been change kind of in everyone. I do know six is quite a lot still, but I do think that's why we're still, also when I say we're learning, we are still connecting. I know me and Neve talk at the line, and we're still learning about each other. I actually just learned one thing yesterday and thought, oh my God, how have I not seen this in 4 months, 5 months. I was like, what am I, like, how did I not know this? So it's just, yeah, you find out more about players every time kind of you go out. So yeah, very pleased to have kept six players and built there, built through six more.
Are you going to tell me what you learned in that moment?
Hello.
No, I knew you wouldn't, Jo. I knew you wouldn't. I'm always scurrying about for an extra answer.
All of them are going to be like, oh, right, we need to do this. I'm like, no, stop.
That's fair. I'll come back at you with some stats then, because Siggy Berger, you're absolutely right. Mm-hmm. The second season really settled in, looks so happy. Second in the league for goals at the moment, isn't she, on 352. And Jazz Brown, what a great player to watch and for you to pair it with in the circle, no doubt. 14 intercepts. She's currently seventh in the league. So that's pretty great at the halfway stage. We haven't, though, seen you visualised in a game since round four, which is the game that you played against Manchester Thunder. But you are going to be on Sky and the BBC, get this, in round 10, 11 and 12. So against Thunder and then Pulse and then Dragons. So we're going to see lots more of you. And I get to commentate the Pulse game, which I'm really looking forward to. But I guess the onus is on you in that one, because you've taken the win once already. What have you learned from the first nine games then that you're going to project into the second set of nine games?
A big thing still comes back to us reviewing footage and being like, right, why aren't we doing what we've, you know, said we're going to do from basically week one? Everyone says that word consistency, and I think for us it's actually the discipline. I'm going to use the word discipline to apply our structures and our strategies throughout a whole 60 minutes. That's what I'm asking of them for the next nine rounds, or the next nine league rounds, and then obviously into the final series. Is that discipline to maintain that, and then it's that discipline under fatigue to be able to communicate what is happening and what we need. So, yeah, for me, I think that word is going to be discipline for us in this back half.
Oh, that's brilliant. Thank you. And of course, you were awarded Coach of the Year last year for getting seven stars to that sixth place finish, your joint highest ever finish. What are your goals for this season? And as I'm looking forward, I'm just looking at the top four. What are your goals?
Yeah, absolutely. Our goal is top four. We know once you're there, it's just another game. You just put your all into that. And then see how you go kind of thing. So for us, it is about making that top four. It's about delivering. We know we've played teams. We know they're going to come up with different structures and strategies. We're also not using a few of ours well enough that we're going to, you know, be looking at and going back to a bit of back to basics for us as well. So top four is our goal. And that's kind of where we've got our vision set right now.
Well, look, Jo, we are so pleased that your retirement was so short-lived. We are just delighted to have you back in the Super League, and you've made Seven Stars a team that is absolutely one to watch. I really enjoy watching you all play. So thank you for speaking to me, and good luck for the rest of the season.
Thank you so much, Lindsay.
Jo, it's always such fun to talk to Jess, and it was a real insight actually in how she picks her team, and she looks for those gels of personality, sort of saying, I'm not necessarily looking for the sort of star player, I'm looking for that overall gel together. Do you ever select a team based on personality?
Oh, I think it has to be fundamental to selection. It sits alongside all of those other factors that you're trying to take on board. I've actually said for a long time, even since I was playing, you know, having gone through selection multiple times, it always kind of surprised and shocked me that really, other than what you do on the netball court, technically, tactically, and then your physical fitness tests, there was nothing else. You know, like, what about the psychology? What about the behaviours? How are we selecting based on that as well? Not instead of, or on its own. So I've always been quite curious about that, and think it is kind of remiss of us to not understand the person. I think that's the modern team, right? And the modern way of coaching as well. So it doesn't surprise me, you know, like Jo saying that. I think what we'll never know is kind of the context by which, you know, Jo's picking her team or recruiting, and how I go about selection, you know, like, because we don't understand the other constraints, do we? You know, there's somebody holding the purse strings, you know, like, there's only so much you can fit into the salary cap. But equally, that's Jo's philosophy. And you know, I 100% get where she's coming from. And you can have a bunch of superstars and never win anything, you know. So I think there has to be more to a team than just what, you know, their competencies on the court. Our culture at the Roses, I think one of the main reasons we were able to walk into Cape Town feeling more confident was because of what we were investing in away from the court, you know, our behaviours, our standards, how that then transferred into how we play. I think on its own most probably isn't enough, and she's most probably doing a bit of a disservice to, she's got a collection of players there that I think have got a point to prove, and they've jumped on, you know, the Stars bandwagon around this big ambition to finish in the top four. So I think it's a perfect recipe for them this year, hence why they've had some better results.
Well, Jess, some big moments on and off the court this year, including the move to professionalisation in 2025 and the great work being done through the Netball Her initiative as well. But let's put our minds forward then, and let's think about the second half of the season and how teams refocus. And I guess really having a look at Stars, because they want to stay in that top four.
For Stars, I think it will most probably come down to, you know, the refinements around their combinations, because I think Joe's most probably had an abundance of choice in most ends and areas of the court. And, you know, they lost out, didn't they, to Dragons, but, you know, the much talked about Jazz Brown, I don't believe even took to the court in that one. So I think most probably the second half has to be about solidifying some of those well-tried and tested combinations. Now, I think, you know, in the shooting end, you know, Siggy Berger, Susie Leversidge, I think has done really well, but she's also got Raderman. So there's so much choice. And I think the first, if they've managed to go the first half of the season trying and testing that and are still within that top four, that's a great place to now give herself and the team permission to really hone in on those combinations that she thinks are going to best target the top teams, and keep them inside that top four. So yeah, I imagine we'll see much more of Jazz Brown, you know, like most probably more of Jo Tripp, unless she decides second half of the season I'm needed more on the bench. But yeah, I think she's doing a great job, and it's not an easy task, and certainly don't envy any player coach. You know, we've got a couple of those, obviously Mickey Austin as well doing that. So yeah, it'll be interesting, but all down to combinations for me now, and not feeling any pressure to kind of rotate if not needed.
And I think, you know, we heard her sort of acknowledge that really and sort of say, I'm really enjoying playing and coaching, but it's not that easy to do both those things. And as well, acknowledging that she really wants to see what players can do and when they can do it, and that she's still learning about that. And it is a development thing. A couple of other teams still developing, of course. Sirens waiting to get that first win. Obviously, we do want to see that. We do see flashes of brilliance from them, but they need to put it together for a full quarter and then a half and then a full game, don't they? Surrey Storm, Leeds Rhinos again. I felt like you said, end of the first half of the season, Rhinos were really building. And then obviously they had that tough match against Thunder, but they will absolutely come back fighting. You know, do not doubt that one. Which matchups are you looking forward to then in the second half of the season?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think I'm looking forward to the ones where you've got that kind of mid-table, like, exactly the teams you've said, like a Leeds, a Mavericks, a Dragons that are going up against the team sat above them. Only because I think that does carry that potential for an upturning of result as we'd expect it in previous years. So anything where those kind of teams who desperate to be the fourth or fifth take those bragging rights as the next best team outside the top four hit out, I think, you know, that means those top teams have got to pay real attention. No longer can they kind of just walk into those games and think it's a given and points are in the bag. They've actually got to really work hard for these points now. So I think any of those matchups, I think, you know, we spoke about bogey teams with Amy and Hallie, and it was interesting, you know, that Amy brought that up as well. And I think Cardiff Dragons have been Thunder's bogey team for a long time. When I was at Team Bath, we never performed well against Cardiff Dragons. Even if we got the win, we always were dissatisfied with how we'd played because they just stopped us playing well. So I think it will be really interesting for that. And Pulse Mavericks, you know, I think about the fact that we've just come off the back of that really feisty game on Monday, such a narrow loss for Mavericks, who would have been desperate to get over the line, an important win for Pulse. They're going to meet each other again in their final match of the season. And we all know how that ended this time last year. So just before a semi-final, they fell short against Mavericks. So there's so much potential for jeopardy. And obviously when you and I can enjoy that because we're not wearing the hat of any one team. So yeah, a bit of a generic answer, but for all good reasons.
We're just trying to hear each other in commentary, Jess. Honestly, the crowds are amazing, aren't they? So loud. But we do a lot of hand gesturing because I sort of think, what she just said, it's so loud, which is what we want. It's brilliant. You can, of course, still get tickets for the final on Saturday, the 29th of June. Do that now on the England Netball website. Also, you can get in touch with me if you want to ask questions, or Jess. We're on Twitter, we're on Instagram as well. But it's been a real pleasure. Thank you so much, Jess, for your insight and for having a really good chat about where we are with the Super League so far. Jess, you and I will be back in commentary soon. I'm doing the Stars Pulse game on the 26th of April, and your next game is
Loughborough versus Mavericks this Friday.
Brilliant. Can't wait to see what happens in that one. Hope you can have a rest now and that your little robot vacuum can go back to doing its work, because it was interrupted.
Because I don't do that work.
Yeah, me too. Me too. We're too busy training very hard. But it's been brilliant. Thank you so much for joining me on the podcast. Great to have you. And thank you for listening. And until next time, I'll see you courtside.